it's easy to get overwhelmed, and it's easy for me to get overwhelmed. Like, I got dishes in my sink right now, and I just left without doing them, even though I could have taken the 5 minutes to do them. So I bring up dishes a lot to when this sort of comes up, but I ask myself often, what's one small thing that I can do to make my world, not the world, but my world, a nicer place? And your world is anything that you have control over. You know, if I have a flare-up in my ankle and I can't walk, clearly I don't have control over that. But, you know, I got control over the dishes in my sink. I got control over my half of my marriage and my relationship, you know, my half of my friendship with anyone. I have control over those things. So when I'm feeling like I am not able to do a lot, I look for this small thing, like maybe the sock I missed in the hamper or the dishes in my sink. Hopefully I ask that question before they get too high, but you know, if I'm going to be overwhelmed and depressed, at least I can have a clean sink, you know?
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Hey, come on in again. It's that time for us, the Professor of Perseverance Podcast. All right, get your favorite beverage, put your feet up, relax. Let's learn something. Let's help somebody get through today. We know everybody's struggling with something, so let's help them get through, and let's show them how what we've went through, that it's capable for everybody to get through and have a good life. Hey, today I'm going to do something a little different here. Today we're going to actually talk about with a friend here, a guest, about hemophiliac. And let's go ahead and look at what he goes and does. I'm trying to figure this out as we go through here. And there we go. And what does he do here for a living to help out people with hemophiliac? Here we go. Man, we have that playing in the background as we're talking, man. Max Feinstein, come on in. Let's talk a little bit here and listen to you while we're going on here. How you doing,
man,
brother?
Thank you for being here. I'd forgotten about this. I hadn't. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. So you're bringing back some good old memories, huh?
Yeah, it's that's a little bit of an old video, and what's cool about it, it's a song by a gentleman named Johnny Showcase. And Johnny Showcase is having a hell of a moment right now.
Yeah.
Is there any way you could bring that down? I can't hear over you.
Yeah, take it down. We may have taken on off here. We about got her down.
Okay. Cool. Sorry. It's Johnny Showcase is the artist, and he has his moment right now on, I believe it's America's Got Talent. He made it onto another round, and it's lovely to see an artist that I've enjoyed for a while get a more national viewing and to be received by people like Simon Cowell, who are notorious hard asses.
Yeah.
So it does bring back a fond memory.
There you go. Hey, and we got Nancy on. And I talked to Nancy before we got started here and told her you're going to do the give me an H to get started. And Nancy, he advised me that's an old, I mean, not real old, but an old program that was going on. It may not be as active as it is today, but she's over here hollering, give me an H on her coming in here.
I appreciate that.
So, all right.
I love
all
that.
Right, and again, so our topic today we're talking with Max is hemophiliac. And so we're going to talk about how he gets through the day, what is a hemophiliac, because even Nancy asked me that when I was talking to her. So, Max, if you want to go and describe to us what hemophiliac is, and then we'll just move on through life from there.
All right, I'd be happy to. Nancy, it's pretty easy to break it down. The way I like to start explaining this is from the basics of blood. So we all have blood, and blood serves the exact same purpose in everybody. It is the thing that carries oxygen through your body. It's just your circulatory system. It's the goo and the juice that makes a human being go. If you don't have it, you don't live. And essentially, it's bumping around your system, going from your veins, pumping out of your heart, circulating through your body as blood is wont to do. Now, what we don't really think about, because it's happening right now, I don't know if you're sitting down, I'm sitting down, it's happening whether or not you're doing anything. And what is difficult to appreciate in that is that there is actually something of a traumatic experience inherent in that. It's kind of bumping around your system. And that can cause, the term is microbleeding, but I've been using a different term to describe it. It's more like a micro trauma. It's little bleeding internal damage that happens so minuscule and is generally dealt with by the body kind of right away, because we have this table, this balance table of proteins that are designed to stop those, to, you know, clot. And then the other side of it is designed to stop clotting before you end up with a blood clot in a problematic area of your body. So when that table is out of balance, when that protein table is out of balance, there are issues with how that microscopic bleeding gets dealt with, or how a microscopic clot might not stay microscopic if you're unbalanced in the other way. So there are varieties of these proteins. They're often called factors, clotting factors, anti-clotting factors. They're numerated, but I would be lying if I said I knew which from which. But you can kind of use a domino effect as a way of appreciating what that mechanism of clotting looks like. There is an engagement of each of these proteins, and if you are lacking a significant amount of that protein, then it's kind of like one domino is too short to knock the next one over. So that means a microscopic bleed can get out of hand quite quickly. And it's not necessarily life-threatening, though very much it could be. Any trauma is going to be a problem for us in most circumstances. But the thing we don't talk about well enough in our lives communicating what we are to people is the spontaneity of it. The story I tell to illustrate the point of how spontaneous hemophilia is dates back to my senior year of high school. I'm a musician. I was becoming, you know, I was starting to come into my own, starting to write songs. And I just found this really kick-ass band called Porcupine Tree. I love them. And Porcupine Tree is kind of like, they're really cool. It was a really, I got to go see them at Town Hall in New York with my high school sweetheart, with the friends that got me into the band. And it was just a perfect night. And, you know, on the last song they did, which is my favorite of their songs, I applauded. And applauding is technically a microscopic trauma that triggered bleeding into my elbow. That's sort of the big thing with hemophilia is bleeding into the extremities. I know I've sort of gone on, so if you've got any questions about anything I've said at this point, it might be a good idea to stop and take a break for questions.
Well, and that's what we're trying to, you know, going through, just learn. We're not going to get the whole life history on this podcast today, but we get a basic understanding that it's, like I said, it's uncontrollable bleed. And so until it fixes itself somehow or through medical diagnosis or treatment.
Yeah, it's managed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's managed with, we are lucky that it can be managed. Usually through the intravenous injection of a clotting factor replacement.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering, I mean, I knew they did something just in case you have to have some type of surgery, that they had to give something in there to help where it's not a free-for-all with the blood.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are two ways to look at the way that this disorder is managed. Depending on how severe your hemophilia is and how your body is, because not all people with the same severity, that is to say percentage of factor, are the same. You know, there's physiology, there's a lot of variables. There is an on-demand regimen, which is whenever you have a flare-up. And then there is the prophylaxis, which is you do this with regularity to try and give yourself an extra layer of protection consistently. These are, you know, those are essentially the two ways this gets managed.
Okay. Now, how old were you when you were diagnosed or you found out you had it? Was it after watching Porcupine Tree and get all excited with the, like you said, the bleeding in the elbow from clapping that after the concert? Or did you already know about this before?
Oh, yeah. I was diagnosed at 1 year old. I was under the care of my grandparents. My parents were off I think they were going on a cruise or something. They took a trip and I split my lip open on a coffee table, basically. And it wouldn't stop bleeding. So they took me to the emergency room, and we found out basically there.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. So then, that's got to be hard, especially on the parents. And, of course, you had one. It'd be a trauma in a different way. But for mom and dad to realize, oh, no, what do we do now? And I'm sure the doctors overwhelmed them with information on what to do, what not to do, try to keep you in a bubble wrap so you don't get hurt, and instead of living your life or whatever. So, you know, how was mom and dad once they found out what's going on, and how did they treat you, take care of you, you know, raise you from there?
There were difficulties. Essentially, as with any school of medicine and school of thought on a chronic condition, I'm 32 years old, and in the intervening decades, the way we looked at things as a community has changed drastically, as well as the available medication and efficacy of it. When I was a kid, there was a different school of thought, and they just kind of, I don't know. For me, I didn't ever feel truly limited. Mm-hmm. Except for the truly ridiculous things like no, Max, you can't box, or Max, you should not get a motorcycle license, you know, or other stuff like, no, you can't play football. That's a terrible idea. Not like I would have really, but I mm-hmm. can't say that was limiting in regards to that. But there were a lot of things. There were a lot of complications that we all shared. There was the, you know, when you're responsible for a child with a chronic condition, that means that your day can be derailed. it a flare-up happens. At the time, home infusion was less of a thing, and I would have to go to the emergency room or to my doctor. And so at that point, you're impacting several people's day. And
when you say you'd be derailed, and you're talking derailed quick, too.
Yeah, this is kind of like because it's kind of a medical emergency. The thing about hemophilia that's truly messed is with the joint bleeds, and they can happen again super arbitrarily. Like I rolled my ankle pretty bad yesterday, and I had to kind of watch and wait and see what was going to happen. It was fine. I'm in pretty good shape, so that helps. But the idea of having your ankle bone cavity fill up with blood, you know, you can't move it, deeply uncomfortable. You got to get something into that kid that will help him heal. But also, the longer you wait on it, the more damage it does in the long term. The long-term repercussions of prolifically bleeding into your joints are deforming them, having blood calcify in it, like fusing, basically. Or like at 21, that same elbow was on par with a 70-year-old's in terms of damage. I'm proud to say it's much worse now, but yeah. So when that happens, yeah, you gotta like leave work and get this kid medicated, because that's your responsibility as the guardian of a child with a chronic illness who can't necessarily take care of himself.
Oh, exactly. And as the parent, like you said, taking care of a child with a chronic illness like this, they've got to be cautious, but they need to let you grow and be yourself normal as much as possible without, you know what I'm saying, getting freaked out and over-parenting, I guess I would say.
I wouldn't say I was over-parented in that way. I was generally, my parents were open-minded about pursuits. I tended to skew into the arts and into entertainment, so I was not necessarily, I swam, but I guess you could say by nature of who I was, based on how the disorder sort of shaped my motivation. Because what would happen is, you know, I'd have like 3 months on and hit like a nice head of steam with something, and then I'd have a flare up in my ankle where I'd fuck up my knee, and then you'd have to dedicate some time to dealing with that, and I would just feel like a real kick in the nards over it. So you'd have to rebuild that motivation. It becomes a little defeatist. But you know, I in those ways, I wasn't naturally athletic. I'm also kind of short, so that wasn't gonna do me any favors. So it wasn't, I didn't truly ever feel limited because of hemophilia in that way. I may have more set the limits on myself or made decisions about my passions based around that.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that mom and dad were open-minded to let you still be a growing boy. You know, I would hate to think that I'm in the bubble and afraid to go do things. Now, I can understand, like you said, setting self-limitations, you know, because of still not understanding, not knowing, but still, I'm glad they were able to let you grow up as normal as possible and still be able to, you know, to be there for the just in case whatever happened.
There were other complications. My issues largely fed through a cerebral and sort of psychological divide. Where it suffered was not that I was in a bubble for the sake of my physicality, but I was under a microscope. As you know, somebody with an anomaly of their body that requires a lot of attention, means that you are consistently under a microscope. You are, you know, a new life trying to dial in a body that fails you from time to time. You are also trying to learn complicated medical jargon while you're learning the ABCs, but you don't really get a lick of privacy between all the time the disorder demands and all of the demands of school and of family interactions and of other things. And I don't say it was a bad childhood. It was a great one. I wanted for nothing. I had a mother and father who loved me and a full schedule of events and stuff, but because of the disorder, my own life was highly overwhelmed, and I would shut down from what felt like a constant demand of life. And that was a source of frustration for everybody that was not appreciated quite well at the time. I've done a lot of reflecting on it since, and that would make, you know, it was its own source of complexity.
Yes, I can understand, that as well. As you got older and was understanding about the hemophilia and going on in life and everything, did you get into a why me, a depression state, or did you try to stay as positive, mind strong as much as possible?
I don't know if I'm exactly capable of being positive. That's not to say I'm not capable of being optimistic, but
yes, sir.
I have to budget my positivity out for, I guess you could say, I wouldn't say that means I'm negative or that I would say I'm a recovering cynic at this point, but, you know, I would say that optimism was hard. Pragmatism was a way to stay sane. I definitely had, especially early on in my life, a lot of those why me moments in a very specific way, and then they sort of became internalized. And you could say, I think the term is mad at God. You could say I was mad at God for a very long time. And I still feel sort of this abstract anger, but I have learned how to appreciate myself as a human being with his merits and value that can exist aside from a disorder that, when you're in the thick of it, seems as though it consumes your existence, especially if you're advocating. I would say that I was earnest as a kid, that I would try to be hopeful. I would become overwhelmed, and sometimes I would get cut down by the complications of the disorder, and having to deal with that had its sort of drawbacks in terms of me appreciating my emotional intelligence and growing into it, because the nervous system and mental state is overwhelmed with pain. It can't exactly make room for compassion in those moments, and so you get a little stunted.
Oh, yes. Oh, I can understand that with pain involved, it can change your attitude quite a bit and from there. Hey, you got Nancy still hanging in with us, and Brittany, thank you for coming in, Brittany. And she's saying, thank you for saying this. Hey, thank you for coming in, Brittany. And Nancy's got a question here for you, Max. She says,
hooray.
And I'm assuming if anything happens or whatnot, is the emergency room already prepared? Do they already know? Or do you go in and y'all of a sudden you're hollering, hemophilia, hemophilia, or throwing a card up or something, you know, in your area?
That's a great question.
Of course, we know if you're traveling, it's going to be different than home. But how do you let them know so quickly from there?
Well, I definitely carry around a medic alert, but I've also, in this case, I don't know how well it'll show up on camera, but I've got it tattooed on my arm as well, because I lose medic alerts. And I have a file I'm a hemophiliac type A, and you know, that'll get me treated in a certain way. But I also I you know, they would get in contact with my hematologist. Luckily, that's sort of going to be the same way in any state. There's a yeah, generally speaking, there's a provision for us.
Yes. And of course, it's where you've got to be aware with your bracelet or your tattoo for them to know as well, to be alert before they get there with paramedics or however it is.
Yeah.
So Nancy's getting ahead of me here. Nancy, you get ahead of me. Hold on now. Hold on, Nancy. She's getting ahead on a good question here. But what I'm going to bring up, what got you into playing music then? All right. Then she's bringing in is... your music or your playing, is this a form of escape for you in reality with hemophilia? And what got you into it? Was it the porcupine trees, or as you were experimenting earlier with a group and you just fell in love and hung in there?
I have been making noise my entire life. That's, I fancy myself a noisemaker, and music is a place where noise is organized into something that people can appreciate in a different way than somebody just simply screaming in an alleyway, which I appreciate for that. My first memories of that sort of thing were actually in church, because churches have, you know, I grew up Roman Catholic, and the churches are all these high ceiling marble surfaced buildings that will, by nature of that construction, have this reverberation and carry to it. And I found that fascinating, that my voice would be different inside than it would be out on the lawn. I grew up in a household that appreciated music. My mother was, you know, my family was very much into musical theater. And I had a sister who was a little bit older than me, so she would be more hip to what was popular than I was, and I wasn't one to necessarily care about that. So I would siphon music, and it was just always around. And given that I grew up, I became a teenager in 2001 or 2002-ish, so the music that I was surrounded by at that point, the contemporary music, had a very loud thing going, even the popular stuff, because of the 90s rock. Just anthropologically speaking, you know, it was popular to be very loud, and we were getting a lot better at getting loud as a culture, so it seemed like a place where all of this emotionality and intensity I had could live. I saw my friends playing drums in middle school and playing guitar, and I wanted that for myself because it felt relatable, and I didn't feel like a very relatable person for a very long time. I thought guitar would sort of be that olive branch or that thing that forgave eccentricity. I basically grew up listening to, at that point, like punk and funk music, as well as a lot of alternative rock, and it just, very cathartic and celebratory music drew me, as well as interest, you know, everything, really. I love everything at this point, but I guess I just really was that kid jumping on his bed listening to pop punk for a little while. And then I stuck with it because it made me less strange to people. And I started to find expression in it. And then that porcupine tree story happened. And I made the decision to continue through the complications. There are a lot of hemophiliacs I've gotten to know in the last year or so that are essentially in similar places as me. They have elbow damage themselves, and instead they opted to retire themselves from the craft. I felt too attached. and the nature of the disorder was arbitrary enough if they couldn't do anything for me, and I was gonna, regardless of whether or not I played, hurt myself, because I've also injured it shooting pool or sleeping on it wrong. If it's going to be that arbitrary, why not at least earn the damage?
And we're speaking with Max Feinstein, with hemophiliac advocate here for what he's for the advocate for hemophilia. So we appreciate him coming on. Hey, now you say a noisemaker. I'm telling you right now, I respect anybody that plays instruments, singing, no matter how great they are, how bad they may be, because I don't have the confidence, I don't have the glory, I don't have the self-esteem to do that in public in front of people. I have all sorts of respect for anyone going that's out there doing that. So I'm glad you do. And I love what you said. It made you less strange with people, and you could express yourself. And yeah, during the time, you're finding your own identity. And so that's been great. I appreciate that you were able to find this gift to be able to share with other people. And if you don't mind, could you play something for us here just so we get a good taste of your talent?
Yeah, sure. I was actually doing a little bit of demoing here. One of the things I'm experimenting with is actually an open tuning. I hope this carries. Where is it? Why you should be so much louder. Can you hear that? Is that coming through?
Yes, it's coming through, yes.
So this is a bit of an experimental tuning. Let me actually get a proper acoustic guitar and I'll do something respectable rather than I do a lot of ambient sort of self-serving things, because generally that's where the songs come from, or it can be a value in the background of other things, and it also just soothes me. But
well, you get that up and going. Say hi to Jan Fansler. Thank you for coming in. Nancy again. Thank you, Brittany. Hey, Jan, we're talking with Max here, and he's a hemophiliac, and he's an advocate for the hemophilia. So, and also he's a musician. He's going to play a little sample for us. He's hitting it up now.
So, I am... actually enjoying this right now through this. So this is, I'll play a song that I wrote over quarantine that,
yes sir,
sort of, and it's funny because I know I've spoken like I know I haven't spoken in the most uplifting ways, but I promise you that I am a positive individual just taking a peculiar route towards it.
You're doing great, man. I appreciate it. You're doing awesome. Yeah, keep going. You're doing awesome. Keep going.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. So this is, to me, it's all about the little reasonable things as a recovering cynic. Been rounded over extended back week. And I've got no business standing. They do that I've been fomenting. Well, that all that I've been, but then not all I'll ever be. And I'm planting my flag in the sand. I can stand to release. And I tell all the world where I stand. Make peace, peace by peace. Self-love sounds so condescending. We don't go and crazy pretending. That day after one ending day might have any meaning. And I'm tired of pretending I don't see what's happening to me. And I'm tired of expending my energy so recklessly. And I'm planting my flag in the sand. I could sound to release. And I'm telling the world where I stay. Making peace, peace by peace. I haven't been comprehending the signals that I have been sending. They're all that I've been, and now they've abandoned me.
All right, man, that's good, man. I appreciate it. Again, I'm all for anybody that can show the expression, playing, singing, because I can't do it, and I respect anybody that gets out there and does it. So. And I'm glad that you were able to find your gift through all of this, what's going on, and becoming an advocate to help other hemophilias. So, Max, you are an amazing person, and I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. This is, it's really a privilege. It's one of those things where entertainment breeds interest, and I can sort of use that interest. I've been calling it gonzo advocacy. Because it's not necessarily rallies, and it's not necessarily presentations. I can make jokes. I've been an entertainer for 25 years, so it just sort of started clicking.
So, well, I'm glad it's clicking. I had the opportunity, and then I forgot when I talked to Max a month ago that he'd come to Nashville, and I was going to meet up with him, and my schedule came up, and I had a podcast that same day and same time. So I'm sorry I got missed meeting you personally. Hey, Jan says, well done, Max, with your plan. So,
well, thank all right. you. I was worried about how it was going to translate through the little Bluetooth headpiece.
It came out pretty good. Again, Jan and others were able to hear it. I was able to hear it. And again, I don't want to say I'm jealous that you're able to do all that, because that's not my forte, but I respect anybody that's out there doing it. So, and the biggest thing, again, with your challenge as a hemophilia, I'm just so glad that you're out there and found your spot, found your identity, be able to express yourself, and be able to help other people out there. and truly appreciate that. So, hey, Max, we're going to wrap it up right here. But if you can take us, you know, people, they're struggling, they're hurting out there. And if you could come up with a powerful message somehow to help them get through today, that would be awesome, man.
So I have been trying to ingrain this affirmation or this question into my mind for a little while now. I had to write a song around it because it was that thing. It's easy to get overwhelmed, and it's easy for me to get overwhelmed. Like, I got dishes in my sink right now, and I just left without doing them, even though I could have taken the 5 minutes to do them. So I bring up dishes a lot when this sort of comes up, but I ask myself often, what's one small thing that I can do to make my world, not the world, but my world, a nicer place? And your world is anything that you have control over. You know, if I have a flare up in my ankle and I can't walk, clearly I don't have control over that. But, you know, I got control over the dishes in my sink. I got control over my half of my marriage and my relationship, you know, my half of my friendship with anyone. I have control over those things. So when I'm feeling like I am not able to do a lot, I look for this small thing, like maybe the sock I missed in the hamper, or the dishes in my sink. Hopefully I ask that question before they get too high, but you know, if I'm going to be overwhelmed and depressed, at least I can have a clean sink, you know?
There you go. It's right. So it's being grateful for the small things. And I love what you said, you know, your world, you know, if we can take care of our world, then we can expand to the world.
Yeah.
So
you gotta take care of yourself a little bit. And sometimes self-care means doing the dishes.
That's right. If you're not taking care of yourself, no one else is going to do it for you. That's for sure. So,
yeah.
All right. And Jan says, great advice. Focus what you can control. And she said, thanks, Max, from Jan. So, Max, again, thank you for being here, buddy. Appreciate everything. Thank you for helping other people's going to hear us later on. Coming on to replay, you're going to help somebody, so thank you. And everyone else is coming on to replay, be sure to share us out. You know a friend that can use some help, get this encouragement, and listen to this song that that Max wrote and everything like that. And it's beautiful, and I like to say that word, beautiful. So, Max, thank you again. Hey, Jan, Nancy, and Brittany, thank you for coming in. And everyone else,
thank you for listening.
Hey, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.